It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. On this edition, Department of Natural Resources Forester Mark Vitosh joins Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron to answer your questions about the trees and other plants in your life, yard, and woodlands. Call in at 1-866-780-9100 or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. From trunks to stems, it's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa, and the conversation branches out just after the news. This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Julie Englander. It's Horticulture Day, and Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron and Department of Natural Resources Forester Mark Vitosh are here to answer your questions about the plants in your life, anything you want to grow or grow better. Call in at 1-866-780-9100. That's 1-866-780-9100, or email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. The plant guy and the tree guy are here. Richard and Mark, welcome to Horticulture Day today. How are you?
Good. Good morning.
Good morning.
Let's start off with something that we should take a break from, and that's no longer pruning trees. Is that accurate, Mark?
Well,
Why? There's
two times the year that for trees in general that we generally recommend to kind of give them a break, and those two times are the spring when they're starting to leaf out and flower, and the fall when they're going under a leaf color change. They're going under some pretty major changes, so it's best not to be in there and removing a lot of material. So right now, actually in the last weekend or two, I still see people, you know, the spring, you want to get the saws out and start hacking and whacking at things and going at things, but right now, probably for the next month or so until sometime in June, let them kind of grow out, let the growth slow down. And then midsummer, for most species, except oak, which we've talked about many times, you don't want to prune oak now until late this fall, early winter, so don't touch the oaks right now. But midsummer is not a bad time to prune most deciduous trees, like your maples, crab apples, lindens, ash, stuff like that. But right now, they're trying to grow. They're trying to expand their growth. It's a good time to slow down.
Okay, so don't prune trees right now. Wait till later in the summer. Richard, how about pruning other kinds of plants?
Well, as far as pruning shrubs, for example, we like to prune our spring flowering shrubs like forsythia, lilac, as soon as they're done blooming. So they're a little bit different than some of the trees.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay.
Things like lilac, forsythia, other spring bloomers, a good time is right after they're done blooming.
Okay, got it. We'll go on to callers now. Chris from Cedar Rapids has called in to Horticulture Day. Welcome to the program, Chris. What's your question?
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah. I had a question about Japanese beetles. I had read something on a blog where someone advised planting garlic next to plants where Japanese beetles were a problem. Do you know of anything like that that would help?
That sounds interesting, but I don't think it's correct. If that were so easy, it would be nice, but most plants are not going to deter insects, so that's not likely. They like some plants better than others. They may not eat garlic, but it may not deter them from an area.
Okay. All right, thank you very much.
All right, good luck, Chris. We appreciate the call. Speaking of garlic, there is something called garlic mustard, which is growing now, Mark, but it's not exactly a wanted plant.
Right.
It's found in woodlands. So
well, it's found in woodlands and natural areas. Like I live along a creek and have a few trees along that creek area. It has a lot of garlic mustard in it. Garlic mustard is a plant that was introduced quite a few years ago for a number of potential reasons. Medicinal is one. There's actually recipes on the web and other places where you can use it in salad, but it's a biennial plant that was introduced, and basically the first year it starts to grow and produces what they call a rosette. It's kind of small, but then the second year it bolts and gets 2 to 3 feet tall and basically covers the understory of natural areas, wooded areas, and is very invasive and very aggressive, and it can actually outcompete a lot of our native plants. So right now, if you have an understory area of trees or a natural area and it's nice, white, and blooming, and it's their plants 2 to 3 feet tall, they could be garlic mustard. And right now is a really good time to pull that material. You got to pull it and bag it right now, because if you just pull it and lay it down, it can still go to seed. It's one of those things, though, there's no silver bullet. You're not going to control it in one pull, 1 year. The seed can stay in the ground for 4 to 7 years, so you have to pull or weed whack or do other things. There's information on a lot of different sites out there. Our DNR site, if you go to iowadnr.gov and then click on forestry and then on invasives, there's information on how to manage garlic mustard. But there's a whole array of things. But it's, I've been driving around the last 2 weeks, and there's a lot of blooming garlic mustard. So now's the time to inventory your areas and get it out, because even if you're a mushroom hunter, which the mushrooms should be enjoying this weather right now with the moisture coming, you can't even find mushrooms in this stuff because it really gets thick in natural areas and kind of takes over. Okay. Good plant to be watching for.
Okay, get that out of there. We'll go to Tom, who's on the line. Tom, welcome to Horticulture Day. What's your question?
We have some yews out in front of our house planted along the sidewalk. I think they're spreading yews, taxus, densiformis, or something like that. And they've been there for quite a few years. They're about 3 foot high and 18 inches wide, and the deer have eaten off the top half of them on one side and somewhere down along the side. And I only have green needles on about a foot across the top and about down along the bottom where the snow was up on them. Are they going to recover, or is it?
Well, I have good news. Yews are one of the exceptions as far as evergreens. They do have the ability to develop new growth on bare branches, so they should go ahead and do that. They may not fill in completely this year, but they do have that ability, so I think there's a good chance they will.
Well, good. That's great news.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear it.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling, Tom. We appreciate it. Well, yeah, bye-bye. I cut him off just a little bit there. Quick on the draw here. We'll go to John in Waterloo. John, welcome to Horticulture Day. What's your question?
Hi. Hey. I got some volunteer cedar trees that will kind of grow along the ditches and stuff coming up in the yard, and I was wondering about using them for a hedge in the back. What the neighbors would think, or if they would be detrimental to the neighbors, or things like that.
They're actually a good windbreak tree, John. They don't have a lot of disease or insect problems. They're probably not
pretty,
right? And especially in the wintertime, they'll turn kind of an off brown, purplish color, which some people don't like. I think they're a great windbreak tree. They're probably not. They will respond to hedging a little bit because they are a juniper, but they're not going to like that very much. So they're going to want to be more of a tree that can develop. They actually want to get anywhere from 25 to 45 feet tall. They can get pretty good size, and they can get 15 to 25 feet wide. They're not going to like to be hedged, but they could be hedged or treated as a hedge. But I agree with Richard. The neighbors may not like the look of them as much, but they're tough. They are very tough, and they don't have a lot of, especially up in the Waterloo area. One of the problems we're seeing in the southern part of the state, and actually the winters have helped us here lately, but there is an insect called bagworm that can be very devastating, but the last couple winters have knocked that population back down into southern Iowa. So up in Waterloo, you shouldn't have a major problem with those. The other thing, they are the alternate host to cedar apple rust, which jumps over to apple trees and can cause damage to apple trees. But there's cedars everywhere, so that problem is usually a common problem everywhere you go.
How close together?
If you're planting them for a true windbreak, I would actually probably plant them 18 to 22 feet apart to let them. And then if you have room, I would actually plant two rows and then plant the gaps. But if you don't, one option is you could plant them closer, like every 10 feet, and then take every other one out somewhere down the road. Because if you get them too dense, they'll actually shade each other out, and then you'll start to have problems. The problem with that, sometimes people put all that energy, plant them, and then they won't cut them down, and then they get too dense.
Right. Okay. Great. Thanks.
Thanks for calling. We'll go next to Bernard in Forest City. Bernard, welcome to Talk of Iowa Horticulture Day. What's your question?
Good morning. I have Lily of the Valley, and as you know, it's very prolific.
Mm-hmm.
Wondering how I can go about controlling that. It's spreading, you know, into my lawn from where I planted it near the house, and that's where I wanted it to stay, but it doesn't seem to want to stay there.
Yeah, it spreads quite aggressively, but underground stems are rhizomes, and typically by itself it looks really nice, but it does spread. And so as far as controlling that spread, you can basically use your lawnmower.
Okay.
You can use Roundup, and you can use a spade. And those are the kind of the ways that you kind of do that. When you do use a spade, you have to physically remove those rhizomes and roots in the soil.
Uh-huh.
Otherwise, if you leave them, they'll resprout. So you need to physically remove them.
Okay.
And if you use Roundup, it may take more than one application to do that. But those are typically the ways to do it. A lawnmower, a spade, and Roundup.
Will Roundup just kill the ones that you hit, or will it spread in through the root system or to the originals? Or?
Well, they're connected, and so you might get some plants further along that might die, but it's not going to kill everything.
Oh, okay. And then this seems to crowd, I mean, just kill the grass. Is that typical? I mean, is that where they grow up, it seems like the grass just doesn't have a chance.
Well, they're taller than the grass, and so they provide quite a bit of competition. And so things become difficult for the grass. The grass gets a little bit thin, and the lily of the valley keeps on growing, gets even thicker, and growing conditions for the grass get even more tough. So over time, it may kind of lose out.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll give one of those three a shot.
Thanks.
Or possibly all three.
Well, maybe. Okay.
Thanks, Bernard. Bye-bye. We'll go next to Larry in Linden. Larry, welcome to Horticulture Day with Richard Giron and DNR Forester Mark Vitosh. What's your question? Larry, are you there? Well, perhaps Larry will call back at some point. We'll go to an email right now. People can call in or write in to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. John says, I would like to grow sweet cherry trees in Ames. What varieties are appropriate to last the winter in Iowa?
That's the problem. Most of the sweet cherries are not reliably hardy in Iowa, especially central and northern Iowa. In central Iowa, they could try some of the newer varieties from New York State. There's gold, there's black gold, and white gold.
Okay. We'll take a break, very short break, but we'll be back in just a moment. Horticulture Day and Talk of Iowa with Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron and DNR Forester Mark Vitosh. They'll be here to answer your questions. 1-866-780-9100. You're listening to Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. I'm Julie Englander, and we're talking with Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron and DNR Forester Mark Vitosh. They're here to answer your questions about plants you want to grow or grow better, especially trees today. Call in at 1-866-780-9100 or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we'll go to Bill in Fort Dodge. Bill, welcome to the program. What's your question?
I'm interested in how light affects certain vegetables. In Alaska, for instance, they grow humongous vegetables, and I was considering putting up a grow light on my pumpkin to extend the day length. Comments?
I'm not sure it's going to help that much. Alaska has very unique growing conditions as far as temperatures and day length, but I'm not sure that putting that outside is going to have much effect on something grown here in the Midwest.
Well, would it be detrimental in any form, shape?
I don't think it would be detrimental. I'm just not sure it's going to produce the desired effects.
Okay. One other question on micros, macrorhiza. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, to some extent. As far as
using it, I've come across that some of the giant pumpkin growers are using it to cause greater growth. Do you
I'm not sure how well that really works. I haven't seen any scientific basis for it, and so I'm not sure.
Thank you for your time.
It does work well in trees. Mycorrhiza is a natural relationship, actually, between fungi and roots, and actually the mycorrhiza help better absorption of nutrients and water. I have not seen anything directly with vegetables, but I know in trees, actually in our nursery operations, sometimes we actually will inject with mycorrhiza to actually improve root growth and root uptake. So there is a relationship, but I'm not sure how it is with veggies.
I'm wondering why we haven't looked at that.
Well, thanks, Bill. We appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now. We do have an email about pumpkins. Beth wrote in. She says, we got a very large pumpkin last fall, about 50 pounds plus, and saved the seeds. I plan to distribute them to our Clover Kids 4-H group for growing challenge this summer. How deep should the seeds be planted? How far apart? And do you have any tips on how the kids can get the biggest pumpkin? She says, I've heard of feeding it milk with a straw, but I'm looking for something a little bit more doable. I'm not sure.
Well, the first
that's
thing
all would, about, but anyway.
Right. The first thing is they're a warm season crop, so you want to wait until the danger of a frost is past before planting those. And you typically plant those in hills where you might have maybe 3 or 4 seeds in a hill. You plant them about maybe about a half inch to an inch deep. And as far as spacing, they are huge plants, so they need a lot of space. And so if you're putting those in hills, you might space those hills maybe 8 feet apart. They do need a lot of space. As far as getting the largest pumpkin, basically make sure you have a good, fertile, well-drained soil. You can fertilize lightly before you plant if you want. Make sure they have adequate moisture during the growing season. And when they start to flower and bear fruit, try to limit the number of fruit on the vine to maybe just 1 or 2.
Okay, sounds good. We'll go next to Ray in Mason City. Ray, welcome to the program. What's your question?
Hi. I have a blue, and they come kind of in a chain, but they all look like trumpets.
And you're trying to remember the name of them?
Yeah, my father told me what they were, and I want to know if I could, excuse me, transplant them.
Okay, could you describe the plant a little bit more?
Well, the right now the they must spread pretty easy because, but they're maybe a foot high.
Would these be bluebells?
Would they be what?
Bluebells,
Virginia bluebells.
I was just looking at bluebell, and that didn't have the right shape. They look like little bells. These are actually more like a trumpet, like what the hummingbird would like to stick.
Oh, on. Okay.
And I was thinking of Sweet William, but that, I don't think they're that either.
Okay, do the plants, do they persist all summer long? Do they die back by early summer? What does the plant do the rest of the year?
I think they just are green right now. I haven't lived in or been around that house for much till the last July, and I've been trying to remember what happened when I was a kid.
Yeah. I'm not sure what you're referring to. You could try collecting seed from the flowers. Once the actual flower is done, they'll form a fruit, and that fruit eventually will mature and typically turns brown. Mm-hmm. And then at that point, you could collect the fruit and break those apart and then spread the seeds, possibly. But without knowing exactly what kind of plant it is, it's hard to give you exact recommendations.
The other thing you could do, Ray, is you could just take a sample of the flowers and the leaves or the plant itself, if you can get to them, and take it like to your county extension office. And if there's a master gardener up there or somebody, they could probably identify it for you and then give you suggestions on how to propagate it.
Okay. Would it be a weed?
It could be. The other one I think of is there's a lot of native violet that's blooming right now.
Yeah, no, I got a bunch in my yard, little blue and white flowers.
Right. But
very
the sweet,
pretty, but they're
yeah,
green.
The Sweet William actually doesn't have a trumpet. It actually has a more of a regular flower.
Kind of a flat flower.
Flat flower. Mm-hmm. So I've been spending a lot of time in the woods, and it's not ringing a bell right now. But I would take a sample to, like, your county extension office and just see if they can, and if they can't, they'll send a picture to someone like Richard or someone at ISU to try to get it identified for you.
Thanks, Ray.
Well, thank you very much.
We appreciate the call.
Bye.
Well, bye-bye. We'll go next to Mary in Iowa City. Mary, welcome to the program. What's your question?
Hi, Julie.
Hi.
I have some seriously ugly serviceberry bushes there on the bank of my pond last year. I don't know how old they are, but they were probably over 20 feet tall. Just gangly and, in my opinion, very ugly. I got my husband to whack them back with a chainsaw last summer. They're still alive, but they're still terribly ugly. I was wondering, is this the type of shrub that should be whacked all the way back to the ground to rejuvenate it?
Well, I normally wouldn't do that to a serviceberry. Some shrubs, you can do that. They're very tolerant of that type of treatment. Things like lilac, spirea,
right.
Dogwood, they'll come back very nicely. But I've never heard that associated with the serviceberry, so I have my doubts on that. They're maybe not as tolerant, and so they may not come back very well at all, possibly.
And depending on the variety, they actually want to be a little more tree-like, some of them, depending on the variety. There's some that are multi-stemmed, but some will get 20 feet tall or so, and they're more a small tree than or a tall shrub.
Yeah. Okay, so these are now whacked back to about 6 feet, and they're alive. They're putting out little growth.
Are they putting out shoots near the ground at all?
No, they're putting out all the way up the stem.
Yeah.
But they're not very long. I mean, they're just buds at this point.
But nothing near the ground itself?
I hadn't noticed that.
Okay. If they did, that would give me reason for hope or optimism that they're going to be okay. But if they don't...
What you see is what you get.
Kind of, yes.
Okay. All right. Well, they may just have to go then.
But as they develop, they do get kind of dangly. That is their...
Oh, yeah.
That's not... That is their natural form.
Yeah, they were just really ugly, and it looks like they're not getting any better. So I may just get rid of them.
Well, thanks for the call, Mary. At least
Thank
you have
you.
A decision. Yeah.
Bye.
Bye-bye now. We'll go next to Geraldine in Cedar Falls. We're coming up on a break, Geraldine, but just briefly, what's your question for Horticulture Day?
Just a couple of quick questions. Thank you for taking my call. I have some volunteer oaks in my yard. Can I dig them up and trance them someplace else?
Well, if there's no better choice, if they're going to get whacked by the mower, I would take them right now still. I mean, if you had a choice, actually late fall or early spring when there's no leaves is the best. But if you can get a good scoop and get the whole root system, so if they're only like a foot, they're pretty small, you could probably still get them now if you need to get them out of the way.
But well, it'd be best to leave them.
Yeah, if you can wait, leave them till fall once the leaves come off, and then get as much of the root system as you can and move them. And if they're small, you're probably going to want to put a little cage or something around them because rabbits just love to eat those things right down on the ground.
I noticed that, yes. One other quick thing, can I transplant ferns after they've come up?
If you do it quickly, you can, yes. Make sure you dig them up with a nice ball of dirt and water them in nicely.
Okay, and can I plant morning glory seeds now?
Maybe wait another week or 10 days.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Geraldine. We're going to take about a five-minute break. When we return, Horticulture Day continues with DNR Forester Mark Vitosh and Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron. 1-866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Horticulture Day. I'm Julie Englander, and Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron and DNR Forester Mark Vitosh are here to answer your questions about trees and other plants you want to grow or grow better. Call in at 1-866-780-9100. That's 1-866-780-9100. Or email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we have a call from Barbara in Ames. Welcome to the program, Barbara. What's your question?
I have a red maple that I put in 3 years ago, and it the center column of the tree, it's about a 20-foot-high tree at the moment. Right in the center, about from the top to about 3 feet down, it looks, has no leaves, nothing on it. It looks like it might be dead, and I wondered what to do. Is it dead?
Well, it could be, Barbara. If it doesn't leaf out in the next couple of weeks, there's a good chance that portion. And it sounds like this is a very large tree, and if you only planted it 3 years ago, it sounds like it was a pretty good-sized tree when you planted it.
Yeah, it was about 15 feet.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times, was this bald and burlapped or in a big pot, or how was it put in?
Well, I had them Country Landscape planted it for me. I don't know what they did.
Okay, well,
they should know what they're doing.
Yeah, they do. Sometimes on large trees, you'll get pretty significant transplant shock. And depending on weather and other conditions like that, you might start to get some decline before they really start growing. And it sounds like maybe related to the size or something like that, you're having some problems. So on big trees, they have a more difficult time. They do everything they can to dig them to specs and give them the best chance. But sometimes on those bigger trees, it takes them longer to get established. And if there's problems in that meantime, you can start to get dieback. So I would call them back, have them take a look, but there's a good chance if it's not leafing out that it's dying back, and what you have left is what you're going to get. So you might have to reevaluate if that tree is going to give you what you need in the land. If you lose that much, the rest of that tree is probably not going to develop into a very good-looking tree with the middle of it gone.
Really?
Yeah.
So just having it cut off isn't a...
Well, it's an option. So whatever you cut off is what you have left. But if you have just a lot of side branches and nothing developing into a main leader, it may be difficult for it to develop into a quality-looking tree. So I would ask them to take a look at it. But if you can...
And what would they be telling me? Whether it's worth trying to save?
That would probably be the first thing, is they would look at it and see... you know, how much is left, and if it was worth pruning that material out and see if you can develop a tree still.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Barbara. Good luck. Hope it works out. Bye-bye. We have an email from Wayne in Marshalltown. He says, I have a 40-year little leaf linda growing on the terrace between the street and sidewalk. About 20 years ago, it started losing its leaves late in August, with the leaves becoming rust-colored in mid-August. The tree is much smaller in diameter, about 16 inches than a younger little leaf linda down the street. He wants to know, he says a tree consultant recently said the leaf drop was related to aphids, which are attacking the unhealthy tree. If it is related to site-related situations, will increasing the diameter and thickness of wood chips at the base help? That's currently at about 10.
Well, actually, if it was aphids, you would see aphids every year if there was a problem. And usually they don't cause a lot of browning. A lot of times they'll cause kind of a wilty look, and you'll actually get a lot of sap, which is actually called honeydew, dripping from the tree, and you see that on the ground. But that tree's been in the ground for 40 years between the street and the sidewalk. Could be a restricted root zone, even after 20 years, depending on the width of that area. There's only so much room between the sidewalk and the street. Those roots start to develop along the cement and get somewhat restricted. Little leaf linden is one tree that does fairly well in those conditions. But the other thing we get sometimes, depending on the planting depth and stuff like that with lindens, we'll get what we call girdling roots. So one thing I would have him do is look at the base to see if it has a nice root flare. If it doesn't, if it's kind of straight up and down, he might want to take a little trowel or digger and actually dig around that and see where those roots are. If he goes 4 to 5 inches before he finds the first root, that tree could actually be too deep, and you can dig out and kind of dish that out a little bit, but there's not much unless you find some girdling roots that you can actually cut. What I would do is I would go to University of Minnesota website and look up stem girdling roots. There's a scientist up there that's done great research. It'll tell him what to look for. But to me, I think we're looking at either a restricted site or the tree might be having some root problems that's causing that slower growth. And the aphids may just be associated with that, but you would see the aphids. And so if it's happening every year at the same time, to me, root system kind of comes to mind, because if the edges and stuff are turning brown, that's more of a leaf scorch, and that's usually not getting enough moisture. So usually that's related to a root problem. So I would take a look at that lower portion of the tree.
Okay.
But I wouldn't put extra mulch, not around the trunk or anything like that. You can mulch the area, but a tree that big, just mulch in a small circle around the trunk isn't going to really do much to make it better, other than keeping the weed whacker and the mower away, which is good. but it's not really going to bring that tree out of something that might be site-related.
Okay. We'll move on to John in Waterloo. John, welcome to Talk of Iowa Horticulture Day. What's your question?
I have a fairly large bed of the purple flower. It's a vinca minor, I think, or periwinkle, and it's been invaded by a different ground cover that's about 6 inches taller. It has a soft green center on the leaf with a white border on it, and it spreads by runners. And I'm trying to get it out of the vinca bed, and it doesn't pull well because it breaks off at the ground level. And I'm wondering if there's some kind of weed killer that would attack it but wouldn't hurt the vinca.
Okay, the second one, the nasty one, has a green leaf with a white edge to it?
Yes. I haven't ever had it identified. It belonged to our neighbors, and they don't have it anymore, and now I do.
I wonder if it might be variegated gout weed or bishop's weed.
It's a variegated something.
It has kind of a, I would describe it as a kind of a medium green leaf, not a dark green, but a medium green leaf.
And
it's kind of a creamy white edge to it.
Yes, and the leaf, I believe, is kind of jagged.
Well, if it is gout weed or variegated gout weed, that does spread very aggressively by underground stems or rhizomes.
Yes.
It is extremely hard to destroy, extremely difficult. And there is nothing that would selectively kill that and not the vinca. So there would be nothing selective.
In fact,
Roundup, if you apply Roundup, Roundup is not going to effectively destroy it in one application. You might have to apply it several times over several months to get rid of it. Or if you dig it up, you have to physically get down there and remove all those roots and rhizomes from the soil.
Yes.
And destroy them. Otherwise, those portions that remain in the soil, they'll resprout. So if it's gout weed, it's very, very hard to get rid of.
Could I use something like a paintbrush to paint the leaves with Roundup to keep it off the vinca?
Oh, sure. You can use like a foam-type paintbrush and just kind of dab it on. But I don't think that's going to be sufficient to get rid of it. It's a really, really nasty little plant.
Maybe I should dig up the whole bed and then just replant the vinca.
That might be an option. But if you did that, my guess is you can't really replant back in that area until maybe this coming fall.
I see.
Where you make sure that you dig it up, you wait, and if it reappears, you dig it up again. You wait. If it comes up again, you dig it up again, that type of thing.
Oh, it's an activity. Okay.
Yes, it is.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for calling, John.
Yep.
Bye-bye. We'll go next to Mary in Clarence. Mary, welcome to Talk of Iowa Horticulture Day. What's your question?
Thank you very much. We have a really nice bed of asparagus, and we get a lot of grass and weeds growing in it.
Mm-hmm.
We've heard that rock salt will kill the weeds but not the asparagus, and I wondered if that was true or if there's something else we can do other than hand dig all the weeds and grass out.
Well, I wouldn't use salt because asparagus is somewhat salt tolerant, but some weeds are also salt tolerant, so
okay.
It doesn't get rid of all the weeds. The other thing is, if you add enough salt, it actually does damage the asparagus eventually.
Okay.
Typically, with an asparagus bed, there's a certain amount of cultivating and hand-pulling that you have to do. You just have to do it. And that should control most of the weeds. When you do cultivate, you should cultivate shallow so you don't damage the actual asparagus plants. You can use a herbicide at one time, especially, and that would be basically the last harvest of the year in June, where you went out in June, and at that point, you cut all the asparagus, every single asparagus stalk above ground level, back to slightly below the ground at that point, everything. And then you go out the very same day, and you spot treat with Roundup. But you can only do that if you get all the asparagus off out of the ground, basically, down to the ground.
All right, terrific. Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling.
Mm-hmm, bye.
Bye-bye. We have an email from Kevin and Karen in Iowa City. They say, we bought 2 cherry trees, a van and a Bing. What do we need to know about planting them, soil preparation, distance apart, et cetera?
Well, the biggest concern that I would have would be maybe a lack of hardiness. Those two are sweet cherry varieties, and most sweet cherries are not reliably hardy in Iowa for the most part. If we have a cold winter like the last two winters, we could get winter kill where the majority of the plant itself may die. So that's my biggest concern right there, is a lack of cold hardiness. As far as planting any type of fruit tree, we want to make sure they're planted in a well-drained soil. They do not do well in wet, poorly drained sites. They're very prone to root rot in wet sites, and so they will die quite quickly if they're planted in a wet, poorly drained site. So it should be a well-drained site, and it should be a fertile soil, and it should be a sunny location.
Okay. We'll go to Tom in Iowa City. Tom, welcome to Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. What's your question for Richard Geron? Hi.
Richard, you're going to want to shoot me because you've been asked this question a couple times a few years ago.
Okay.
It has to do with lilacs. I know I've got some shafts that are probably 2.5 to 3 inches in diameter. You know, they're the bigger ones.
Okay.
And they go quite high.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you said to take out a third of the big ones every year so that the plant starts to lower itself.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't remember what time of year you said.
Well, you can do that. By the way, I don't own a gun, by the way. but as far as doing that, you can do it either early in the spring before they leaf out, like in March, or you can do it as soon as they're done blooming. Either one is okay.
Oh, even when they're done blooming?
Right. As soon as they're done blooming, where you go out and maybe select two or three of the very largest stems and cut those off near ground level.
Right. Oh,
so
I didn't
you can do it in March, or you can do it as soon as they're done blooming.
Oh, so maybe in a couple weeks.
Right.
Oh, okay. Hey, and I had another question. I'm sorry. I was on the phone when that lady talked about transplanting a little baby oak.
Uh-huh.
And you said probably wait till fall. I've got some little baby sugar maples.
Right.
Same thing, wait till fall?
Same thing unless you just need to get them out. I mean, if you can get the whole thing and basically it doesn't know that it got moved, you're probably going to be okay. But if it's going to be a little bigger job, you're better off to wait in the fall once the leaves drop, or actually mark it and even do it first thing in the spring before the leaves come out. When they're dormant, you have better luck. But if you move it, you know, we're starting to get some rain, you know, this weekend and stuff like that. If you get the whole thing in the root system and really it doesn't know that it got moved, it'll probably be okay on something small. But if you can avoid it and wait, you're better off to do it when they're dormant.
Okay, like in September?
Actually, more like late October, even early November, once they go dormant, once the leaves fall off and we get a couple frost.
Okay, okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Tom. We appreciate the call.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
We'll go next to Patty in Des Moines. Patty, you're welcome to Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. What's your question?
My forsythia bush has already bloomed. Can I transplant it now?
Right now would be difficult. If you have to, I'd give it a try. If not, I'd wait and do it early next spring before it does anything, before it leaves out, before it blooms. Late March would probably be a good time.
Before bloom next March?
Yeah, before it does anything next spring, typically late March. Right now, it's beginning to leaf out, and it's a really difficult time because when you dig up anything and transplant it, you do damage the root system. And that makes it difficult to survive then the coming growing season. So if you could do it when the tree or the shrub is actually dormant, that would be much better. So if you can, sometime in late March.
I will be glad to hear that. And should I put my geranium seedlings out now? I just bought a bunch of little ones. Should they go out now?
I would put them outside if you have purchased them. Maybe not plant them quite yet, but put them outside. And initially put them in a shady location out of the wind, and the rain would help them, and that's fine. And then if there's a chance of a frost or freeze next week, just bring them inside overnight, and then maybe plant them later on.
They're in my basement under fluorescent lights right now.
Yeah, so you could bring them outside, but put them in the shade and kind of basically acclimate them to being outside, but I wouldn't plant them actually in the ground yet.
So take them in and out? Just take them out of the winter, out of the evening air? Or
no, you can bring them outside this weekend, put them in a shady location out of the wind so they can kind of acclimate, and they can stay outside if there's no chance of a frost or freeze. But I wouldn't plant them for maybe another week or 10 days. But if there is a chance of a frost or freeze, if the forecast is calling for a one, then bring them inside overnight and then bring them back outside the next morning.
I just keep my eye on the weather.
Right.
Right. Thanks, Patty.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. We'll go, we have an email actually from Rebecca in Muscatine. She asks, do you have any suggestions of plans to create a privacy screen between two houses 13 feet apart? These are one-story houses about 20 feet high at the peak. I want something that gets at least 10 feet high, but not a lot taller so as not to block all light. I was thinking lilacs or some kind of green evergreen. Any advice?
Well, I'll start with the evergreen. If there's no deer, there's a number of selections of arborvitae that would work in that case if she has the space that only get in that 10 to 12 foot. And you can shoot a few shrubs there, Richard.
That would be my top choice, would be the evergreens. As far as shrubs, most shrubs are just as wide as they are tall, so right. They typically don't fit very well. Possibly a tree, maybe some crabapple cultivars, possibly.
There are some upright ones.
Like Adirondack would be one. Red Baron would be another one that are much more columnar. They're not as wide, and so they might fit in that situation.
Okay. We'll go next to Ashley in Iowa City. Welcome to the program, Ashley.
Hi.
What's your question?
I have a couple questions. My first question is, I just moved into my first house, and the lady there had a bunch of yucca plants kind of in the rock on the back deck, and I want to kill them. I've dug them up, and I transplanted a few of them to the front yard. But behind there, I had a few volunteer plants. Some people call them weeds. And I asked my neighbor what they were, and she told me they were weeds to pull them up. Well, I found out one of them was butterfly milkweed. And I was wondering, and I kind of want that because I'm trying to do an all-native landscape. And I was wondering if that would come back.
With the butterfly milkweed, you did what with that?
I pulled it up.
You pulled it up. Well...
Yeah.
It probably won't come back unless you just, if you cut it off, it's a perennial.
Okay.
It would, but if you pulled it out, you're probably going to have a tough time.
Now, that has a tap root, and so it might, but if it's going to come back, you're going to see it yet this growing season. If you don't see anything by the end of June or July, you probably have lost the plant. It does have a tap root. It's very, very difficult to transplant for that reason. We typically propagate that from seed. They do form the typical milkweed pod, and we can collect those and plant the seed. But they transplant very difficultly. They don't divide very well. So we normally propagate those from the seeds. But like I said, if you don't see it by July, I'm guessing it's probably not going to come back.
Okay, and the seed... If I find some and collect seed pods, do I collect those in like September or like early fall?
It would be late summer, early fall. Now you can also buy these plants at a nursery or garden center. They are sold, even though they're native plants. They actually propagate these. They sell these, so you can actually buy these at a garden center or nursery. So that would be the other option as far as reestablishing the plant.
Actually, in Johnson County, which you live in, the Johnson County Soil and Water Conservation District also has a plant sale every spring of native wildflowers and plants that they sell little plugs that they use as a fundraiser.
I work for the Soil and Water Conservation District
in
Muscatine. So I was just up to Iowa City's office.
Thanks, Ashley. We appreciate the call.
Oh, I have one more question.
We should move on, but thank you for calling. Bye-bye.
All right. Yeah, bye.
We'll go to Lindsay in Iowa City. Lindsay, what's your question in our remaining moments of Horticulture Day?
Hi, I have a really big, beautiful ash tree in my backyard, and I know they're all kind of not long for the world, thanks to the emerald ash borer beetle. And one of the branches, maybe about a third of the way up, so pretty high up, has been damaged. And I'm trying to just decide if it's worth having a tree service come out and cut it off or not, given that the their demise is imminent.
Well, I think if that tree means something to you, we have no idea, Lindsay, when it's going to show up in Iowa City. It could be already here, we don't know it, or it could be 5, 10, 15 years before it gets here. So if the rest of the tree is healthy, and that tree or that branch is dangerous and it would help to remove it, which it usually would on a large branch like that, I would go ahead and take it out. But then also plan, if you have other room to get other trees established potentially, if something does happen later, I would look at that. But we just have no idea, so I wouldn't panic yet. But if the rest of the tree that's going to be left is still going to be a good-looking tree and the tree in general looks healthy, I would get it pruned out. It's not going to be cheap, but I would get it pruned out and enjoy that tree as long as you can.
Okay. All right. Great. Thanks very much.
Thanks for calling, Lindsay. We appreciate it. We're out of time for this Horticulture Day, but we'll be back next week. We appreciate your calls. And thanks again to DNR Forester Mark Vitosh and Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese. Technical assistance today, Lindsay Moon. And Iowa Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Julie Englander. Thanks for joining us.